Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, CEO and co-founder of Literal Humans, Paul David. Kick it over to my esteemed co-host.
I'm the other co-host in your life, William Gadsby Pete. Lovely to meet you is what I was going to say there. Yeah, cool. Lovely to see you all again.
Will's been on holiday for 2 weeks, so we're easing him back into the podcast. And we've got an exciting episode today. We're talking about a topic we've not really covered before, which is InsurTech and reproductive health insurance. We're joined today by Ambra Zhang and Sam Pratt, the co-founders of Juniper. Welcome to the pod, y'all.
Thanks for having us.
So we're super excited to have you on the pod today because we've not covered the topic of reproductive health insurance. And just to give our audience a little bit of background, y'all were founded in 2023. You just raised $1.7 million as of February 2024 in a pre-seed round. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Pretty quick. Like, I mean, you must be pretty gassed after what, found in 2023 and already a raise.
It's been quite a roller coaster ride already.
And just to give our audience a bit of background, I'll let our guests talk a bit about it. But before their work with Juniper, Ambra worked in the world of investment banking for companies including Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and am I saying this right? Eurazio?
Yes, that's perfect.
Perfect. Okay. And then Sam was a software engineer who was the head of engineering at an IVF, is that in vitro fertilization?
Yes.
Insurance provider, Gaia, before co-founding Juniper. I'm really excited to have you on the pod today. Thanks for joining. We'll just jump right into the questions, and we want to start by just kind of like setting the scene for our audience. We know that a lot of folks in our audience will resonate with the feeling of being lost and sometimes feeling even unsupported when it comes to accessing care, especially folks who menstruate. And those folks often bear the consequences of the gender health gap, which you all talk about a lot in your work. So just setting the scene for our audience, how can InsurTech contribute to reducing that health gap that we see?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the health gap is really at the core of what we do. When we look at reproductive health insurance, we see so many different conditions across genders, and they're not all equal. And health insurance nowadays thinks that all genders are equal and you need to get the same care for everyone, no matter actually how specific you need it. And when we look at women, for example, people that menstruate have different conditions versus men or people who identify differently as well. And endometriosis alone, it's been a massive topic of conversation in the last decade, probably, especially in the last few years. We see diagnosis taking a very long time. Actually, well, if we start a bit before that, even getting an appointment to see your GP takes forever. On average, I think it takes anywhere between 3 to 6 months. For me, it took me 3 months to get my prescription when I already had a diagnosis before. And then to diagnose then endometriosis, it takes roughly 8 years and 10 months. And actually, out of all of the people that do have endometriosis, 6 out of 10 don't get a diagnosis. So they just live with it. They have no idea what's going wrong in their body. But then when we go into the other side of the spectrum of actually perimenopausal women or menopausal women, we see that 14 million days, working days, are lost in the workforce because of menopausal symptoms, and nothing is being done for it at the moment. We have also women having incorrect diagnosis when it comes to heart attacks. So over 50% receive an incorrect diagnosis because they have different symptoms generally. And then autism and ADHD are also undiagnosed amongst women and girls. So we have a different wave of mental health problems in adulthood for women. A lot of clinical trials are also done on generally white men or different populations. We could also talk about ethnicities and different backgrounds. But when it comes to women, these are some of the differences we've seen, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I guess secondhand experience with it, but have an ex-partner of mine who was struggling to get an endometriosis diagnosis and had been to a number of different doctors, and this person is a Black woman, and found really difficult to get diagnosed, really difficult to get appointment. Found that some doctors were even underestimating her pain threshold, you know, different treatments and things like that. And just like as a partner, it was so jarring to me. I mean, not you know what she was going through was, you know, 1,000 times worse, but just to see the lack of care and consideration that she was getting from, you know, unfortunately the NHS, but also, you know, private providers. She tried it as well as tried to go through as well. And I really got to see through her experience, like what it was like. And she didn't have access to, you know, great healthcare, you know, to take advantage of some of the private options. But it was really shocking to me. And you know, when I saw Juniper, it just jumped out of like, oh, you know, they're doing something to solve this problem that I experienced secondhand through a partner. So I just want to thank you all for what you're doing, and can really see that it's filling having a gap in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I completely resonate with that story because I'm an Asian woman with polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yeah.
So going and seeing the doctor in this Western world has definitely been challenging. And there are some things that are usually also tailored based on what your genetic history is.
Yeah.
We just want to give a quick overview of how Juniper is a bit different and how it is helping to solve and close that gap.
We're not just looking to cover things for women or women's health. Yeah. We're also trying to bring something for everyone. So especially when it comes to men have on average 2 times less medical literacy towards their problems. So there's a major social stigma around actually seeking care. So there's a Deloitte report that came out a month ago that said women often out of pocket spend 1.5 times more than men on care. This is because, as we just touched on, it's taking longer for them to get to the right care that they need, but men are often leaving it too late to even seek any support. So 1 in 5 men under the age of 65 will die prematurely. We often see a higher rate of suicide and a lower life expectancy for men because, yeah, they don't reach out until it's critical. And especially things for understanding when you need to get your prostate checked. Most men have absolutely no idea when that should be. Yeah, there needs to be more testing and wider threshold of things available, but at least that knowledge is something we want to expand with Juniper. So we're not just about insurance. We also want to make sure people get the care they need when they need it and understand what's available.
So you're empowering folk to kind of be going more towards the healthcare profession. I'm pretty sure that it is this, and I need help, support with it, rather than kind of doctor, you know, give me a diagnosis.
Exactly. So we want to arm people with the information that they need to best support whatever their potential outcomes are, because not everyone wants to have kids. Not everyone wants to start a family or grow the same way that others do. But we want to introduce the term of like good reproductive care or good reproductive health as something that's for the forefront of people's minds. So they at least know what's happening. You don't need to wait until it's too late.
And then I think the stats really back up, you know, what y'all are doing and the idea of offering the product to both men and women. I mean, I think we see that like 1 in 4 men has low testosterone by the age of 30, erectile dysfunction, you know, affecting roughly 1 in 5 men in the UK. And you brought up the stats about life expectancy for men being lower and just unfortunately, like, you know, some level arguably of like hypermasculinity and toxic masculinity leading men to just not seek care or assume they don't need it or things like that. So it's good that you're giving folks the tools to kind of address that and tackle those stats.
It's unfortunate that the perception is that medical care is a feminine trait and that some way...
Don't get me started with this one.
It's absurd.
And that in some circumstances, people think, yeah, it emasculates them by seeking help or seeking care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's also wild how like inaccessible a lot of this stuff is, even if you do know. So I used to be a journalist, and one of the odder assignments I ever had was to go to a testosterone clinic in Surrey, and basically sort of like, because all of our readers were kind of like middle-aged men, so they would be interested in testosterone, and do the process and sort of like have the interview and all of that. And at the end, you know, it's like, okay, well, how much does this cost? It's like, oh, well, you know, it's about 10 grand over 6 months if you want testosterone. It's like, fucking hell. And it's like, yeah. Like, even if you know that you have this problem and you go to get help like from a private clinic, who has 10 grand for the next 6 months for their health? Yeah, like it's pretty wild.
Wanted to focus specifically on the idea of reproductive health, and I love the way that you all have, like, you know, structured your pitch. Came from one of your VCs, InsurTech Gateway, and they said that your pitch for dental insurance but for your genitals, I love that, just from a branding and marketing perspective, well done. You know, your VC said that really opened their eyes to the substantial market that, you know, is largely being ignored by traditional insurance. So what do you see as kind of the biggest challenges and opportunities in the reproductive healthcare insurance market? And what difference do you think you're able to make in the lives of folks out there?
When we look at the European market only for reproductive healthcare, we're looking at £30 billion market.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the European market. Yeah. If we look at it from a global perspective, we haven't done that homework because it's way too much to do. We're talking about a massive opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
And as we just said now, reproductive health is not just about women. And it's actually just not about also men. It's about all genders. And we're talking about all stages of life. It's not just reproduction. It's not just menopause. It's everything. And so when we look at health insurance today and what health insurance covers, we go up to someone and we ask, hey, how's your health insurance? And everyone says, well, I think it covers everything until you claim. until you realize actually doesn't. And what we realized is that in the whole reproductive health space, there wasn't enough coverage. So if we talk about very controversial topics here, like gender dysphoria, health insurance sometimes covers half of it. So we've heard through our user interviews, some people going through the cycle of reassigning gender, being able to do maybe hormonal treatment, but no surgery, or being able to do top surgery, but no bottom surgery.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you're left in that journey alone, right? And so we found a massive gap. It was quite challenging to actually get our eyes open to that because it's really hard to hear, to face really the reality of it. And we then saw that actually companies are paying for these things themselves. They realized there was a gap within health insurance. So actually around 51% of companies pay for reproductive health benefits themselves, whether it's an app, whether it's any services that they provide. And they realized that their insurance broker wasn't able to provide any health insurance. And I asked myself then, why can I go see my dentist with my dental insurance, but I cannot see my gynecologist, or I cannot go to the urologist, endocrinologist, right? And that's where it all started, that dental insurance for genitals. Yeah. It was actually a very good comparison. It started as a joke with Sam because we thought reproductive health insurance wasn't conveying the right message. Yeah. It was people were getting stuck at that reproduction and were getting stuck at that feminine touch to it. And so Sam joked and said, well, it's actually, we can just say genitals. Men would think about their own reproductive health as well. When it comes to the workforce, then we saw the impact of reproductive health and sexual health more and more in the last period. And we see being able to provide sexual and reproductive health products and services in the workforce actually boosting your productivity by 15%. We have a lot of women nowadays in executive positions, which is great, but they are going through a lot from a reproductive health perspective. But then also for men, we don't speak about it, but in a boardroom full of men, people will be having prostate cancer most likely.
Yeah.
So do they receive the proper treatment? Do they have the right screenings for it? So we truly believe that actually investing in sexual health and reproductive health means also investing in progressive companies, being able to cater for more talents, being able to be more inclusive. I think we are very much at the forefront of what the next generation wants.
Yeah. I'm curious about how you've, you mentioned the $30 billion opportunity in the European market. That's specific to medium to large companies. How are you sort of straddling or understanding the like sort of private versus like government, you know, run healthcare systems? And so obviously the NHS provides in the UK a certain level of care. I imagine it's pretty limited when it comes to reproductive care. But a lot of the countries that you're working in, they have, you know, nationalized health systems that offer some level of care, but then you're also, you know, encouraging folks to go into private insurance. So just want to understand how you're navigating that particular landscape issue in Europe.
When it comes to public healthcare, for us, it's extremely important, and we are very grateful to have access to the NHS here in the UK as well as in other countries. But oftentimes, unfortunately, it's just not enough because of the budgets. I mean, the way it's structured, public healthcare is very much about providing treatment for those that need it. And in our case, where they are actually providing that literacy, being able to accompany you through prevention as well, which unfortunately we can't ask the public system at the moment.
And the NHS model is very much focused on late stage treatment, so catching things when it's a little bit too late.
Yeah.
So we're hoping we can help alleviate some of this pressure and get people the care they need sooner, so they're not spending those 10 visits, those months to get the proper diagnosis or proper medication they need.
Yeah. I mean, talking from personal experience, I've been in private care for a long time for my PCOS, as in every year I just go for a checkup. And beginning of this year, I actually went to a GP instead because I thought, well, if I'm going to build something, I may not have health insurance for a bit of time. And well, I had my diagnosis, I had 8 years of diagnosis, all of my papers, I show up and I say, look, I need a prescription. This is what I have. And unfortunately, the NHS has some protocols and they had to go through all of the diagnosis again, wasting a lot of time for themselves, actually, and then actually ended up with a different prescription. So that's the story for another time. And I found it extremely inefficient and I didn't need to go and burden actually the NHS for something that was routine at this point. And this is why we believe that we can have a very good cohabitation of private and public healthcare when it comes to reproductive health.
Just before jumping to the next question, I'd love to know, like, when raising that pre-seed, like, what was the receptiveness to the, of the market to kind of, like, you know, it is a bit of a new idea. Obviously, dental insurance for your genitals is a great pitch, but, like, how did that land? Did you find a lot of folk were interested, or did you have to find the right investment partner? What was the kind of state of the market at the moment?
I think we were very surprised how open people were. So we mentioned it right away, and that allegory that we keep bringing up of, dental insurance for your genitals, it really hit the mark for people that understood insurance. Mm-hmm. So bringing that in, we are expanding on the dental insurance for your genitals. We operate more like that instead of a traditional health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So normal health insurances may look at really, really low frequency claims. Mm-hmm. So think cancer diagnosis or chemo treatments, but extremely high payouts. So their model is a little bit different, whereas every year you may go see the dentist once, you may go see the hygienist twice. Maybe you have a root canal or a filling or something else. If you just change those words a little bit to every year you have some blood tests for some diagnosis, so we know what's happening with your body, you have an understanding what's going on. You may have an STI treatment, you may have something else that's going on, or if we know where you want to end up, we can start suggesting other treatments that you have regularly. So if you want to prepare to have a family in 3 years, we can start to guide you on that journey. If things aren't looking well and we need to go towards IVF, also start getting you in that correct mental mindset, because a lot of the stuff when it comes to IVF or all of these treatments is it's mental. So people most commonly, when they start IVF now, they're already going into the situation thinking, I'm not going to succeed, this is not going to work, I'm a failure in some regard. So trying to get people what they need sooner and in a positive manner, we can hopefully increase success rates there as well.
Just as a follow-up, I'm curious about the insurtech side of it. Like you mentioned, the existing traditional model is, you know, you said it's based on kind of low frequency, higher payout, and that's what maybe makes that model viable. How have you sort of shifted the model to make maybe, I guess, a higher frequency and more regular, you know, more regular visits, things like that? How do you make that model viable in terms of the insurance side of it? Just curious about that.
It's mostly just a different approach. Mm-hmm. So because we price in that prevention is going to help overall treatment. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking that, okay, you don't need to pay for the catastrophic thing at the end of the road, mm-hmm. you start to piece these things in, you can price that in. So that's built into mm-hmm. our business model and our offering.
And is it like underwriters are getting that, I guess, like they're understanding that, like, hey, you know, like I'm wondering how much of it is like just the moment that we're in, like people are starting to understand the value of, like, you know, preventive care, mental health care, as a way to like sort of stem things that follow along. That is there a timing piece to what you're producing here as well, where they're just starting to understand that preventative care matters and is financially viable? Just curious about that.
I think we would have had much of an uphill battle if we were trying to do this, say, a decade ago.
Wow. Yeah.
Where people wouldn't have been as open. Yeah, there's a lot more. The conversation is at least going now.
Mm.
And you have other providers around for different niches, like BetterHelp in mental health spaces, or that are continuing that conversation and bringing people in. You do things more now, you see and reap benefits later. But yeah, to say again, we're not just about kids, so we want to make sure we have something for everyone. So in preparation from when people sort of start their career all the way through when they retire, we mm-hmm. want to offer things like egg freezing, sperm freezing, IVF, gender dysphoria, andropause and menopause. So there's something for everyone, regardless of where they want to take their family, where they want to take their career.
I think even underwriters themselves are facing these issues internally.
Yeah.
And although it is something that will come in the future and it's not yet here, available to everyone, the dental insurance metaphor actually resonates with them a lot because it's a business model they are familiar with as underwriters. So we are blending in this innovative side in terms of business line not being priced before, but then we take that dental insurance business model and then everything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that everyone gets the care they need as well, because you may not be able to out-of-pocket a lot of these things. Amber touched on some companies that are trying to fill this gap themselves mm-hmm. by providing cash allowances to their employees.
Mm-hmm.
While this is a bit burdensome for the business as well, because they need to set aside this capital, they need to plan this, they need to manage this. Also for the person using it, they don't always know they need to pay tax on that at the end of the year, because this is a benefit in kind. So you use 15 grand, here's a 3, 5, 7, $11,000 tax bill that you may need to pay, because this is insurance. You do still pay tax, but only in the premium, which is a few hundred bucks.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to call out about kind of like Juniper specifically as a platform and like the things it's doing differently, how it's addressing those problems?
Alongside just insurance, we also have our care hub that we'll be introducing. This is making sure that we can direct people to the right care they need. We want to provide support, so there's no silly questions. People don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And we want to actively engage with our members to surface things that they may not know. When there's new studies that come out that may be relevant to them, their journey, what they're trying to achieve, to surface this information and really engage with them. Mm-hmm. We don't want to fall into the normal insurer trope where we hope you sign up with us and then you hope we forget we're here. Right. We really want to be involved.
That's a wild challenge to take on, like updating the healthcare literacy of like basically society. Like the healthcare hub, I mean, I guess how are you going to tackle that? It seems like a big undertaking.
It is quite a big undertaking. Yes, with a lot of the advancements that we have now in new machine learning technologies, LLMs, and a lot of AI, we can have quite a lot of improvements here. So we can more say than a few years ago, be able to draw diagnostic graphs between conditions, try and link things together, and through creating like a member profile of this is what Paul looks like, this is where he wants to end up, we can start drawing and linking things together. So I think technology wise we're in a good place as well.
Imagine that TikTok algorithm mm-hmm. on a care hub.
Yeah. One thing about just to follow on the care hub thing, I imagine it's like a big content undertaking. So appreciate what you're saying about AI. We've seen, you know, in our space of like content marketing, branding, and SEO, like folks creating really punchy glossaries using AI, because obviously you can, you know, take that content and dump it in there and then update it regularly and train the algorithm to kind of keep it fresh and keep it relevant to some extent. But one thing we always encourage folks to think about is you have your product, the thing that you offer, your, you know, widget, your service, whatever, but also to think of content as your second product. And that's really what's going to drive people to your product, but also it's going to inform them. And it strikes me that the product that you have requires, you know, a certain level of like customer information, customer education to really understand, oh, I might like have this condition, or I should investigate whether I, you know, have something I want to get treated or have a conversation with a doctor and things like that. So definitely want to appreciate how you're leveraging content in the way that we sort of encourage of like, hey, this is your second product, and it's going to just hopefully accelerate and improve the take up of your core product. So just want to appreciate that.
And really thank nice you. To have someone on the podcast who's not freaking out about AI. For most, normally it's a lot more doom and gloom. So yeah, it's awesome to see some good news coming out of LLMs.
At the end of the day, the care hub is also the simplicity of things. So being able to reach out to someone at any point in time and asking maybe a stupid question or maybe a life-altering question as well. And that goes down to the literacy point. People just cannot access some, or actually do not know where to go to find certain information. And we would be able to provide this platform where you can ask questions at any point in time, whether it's actually accessing our content, but also getting a consultation instead virtually.
Wow.
So without going to the doctor, but just really casually on our platform, being able to book someone, speaking to that person who's a professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to understand that, right, is there like a chatbot portion to it and kind of like question and answer portion where they can, you know, access the glossary that you have or the library that you have information, but they can also get some level of personalized, you know, attention and care? Is that the right way to understand the care hub?
Both of those, yeah. We've seen a sort of shift back towards human interaction for this thing, because personalized care, or especially medical advice, is a touchy topic for some people, and you may not want to get that advice from a chatbot, where it may seem cold or cookie cutter or something else. But we definitely want to have both available, because there are some questions that people want to re-reference or find out where it comes from, or find more into something they've just spoken about. I think both are required for success.
Mm-hmm. That user journey as well at the moment is just really crap. I've had a couple of times I've looked for something myself or looked for something for my girlfriend. It's like, oh, this could be cancer, or it could be that you have the flu. Good luck. Like, it's like, okay, thanks, NHS official website. Go book a doctor, but that'll be a 3-month wait. So like to have that like actual customizability and just more of a look, it's probably one of these two things, is like it's so needed. There's such a demand for it.
Yeah, just jumping into it, I want to understand more. We find that, you know, we interview a lot of founders. We find that, you know, some of the best startups have been founded through personal experience of the founders themselves, the co-founders, and what they've been through. And so I want to just appreciate your experience, Ambra, and hear a bit more about your founder story. You shared a bit with us about, you know, quitting your job and facing 8 years of frustration because the corporate health insurance that you had didn't cover PCOS, and you had to pay, you know, thousands in out-of-pocket, you know, insurance or premiums every year. So it's a story that unfortunately will be pretty familiar to a lot of our audience. So I want to hear directly from you just a bit more about your journey and how it led you to co-found Juniper.
I was having a great job at a great private equity firm and before that an investment bank. So we're talking about places where health insurance is quite the highest level of health insurance you can get, really. And I was quite shocked, actually, when I got the claim back saying, well, you had PCOS for more than 2 years, so we can't cover it for you. And it was just a routine consultation. But then, of course, no one, well, most people don't read the fine print of health insurance. And it's a lot about a tick box exercise for big companies trying to offer benefits to employees. And I was paying this myself. And I thought, well, how can other people afford it, right? And I started speaking to people. I started speaking to my colleagues as well. And I realized that the issue was so much wider. And it wasn't just about me having PCOS. And that's how the whole research started. That's when I started reaching out to more and more people. I spoke to over 100 people just on LinkedIn alone, one of which was actually Sam. And we'll come back to it. And that's when I pieced together all of the whole puzzle, realizing that's what they don't cover, that's what they don't cover, that's what they don't cover. And I was like, wow, but it's actually a lot. There is a whole opportunity here. And unfortunately, it's a problem, unfortunately. And so focusing on that, then I realized, okay, well, if we think about every single side of this problem, so one being health insurance not covering this, two being companies sometimes do offer some cash allowance, but then you get taxed. The third one actually being, but who decides what kind of benefits can employees have? As in, I had an IVF allowance when I was a Goldman, but would that cover things like menopause, right? And so we then thought, let's do an all-in reproductive healthcare, just out-of-the-box kind of solution, the same way you have health insurance, but actually ticking the right boxes this time. And so I reached out to Sam as I was doing these due diligence calls. I took a very much private equity approach in doing my market research. And I saw his profile and I thought it was great. So I pinged him and I said, hi, Sam, I am building a reproductive health MGA. And I'm looking for a network of advisors and the founding team. And 2 hours later, he replied.
Well, yeah, one of the few times I replied to an email.
Yeah. You know how that is. But Sam, wanted to appreciate your, like, so, you know, you mentioned to us in the pre-show that, you know, hearing about Amber's experience really opened your eyes to the gaps that exist in current health insurance offerings and just, you know, maybe broadened your experience as a man who maybe didn't, you know, personally experience what Amber experienced. So wanted you to be able to expand on that and share a bit, you know, how your perspective of coming into this journey with Amber, how that felt for you.
I think starting a few years back, I was first introduced to the problem of how hard it was to start a family for some and how not readily available IVF or some other treatments are to individuals with Gaia, where I was their first engineer and head of engineering, set the direction for a lot of what they're doing today. But I realized that IVF is a little bit too late in the journey to be addressing that problem. It's very important as an opportunity for some and the inception of a lot of families. So it's an amazing, amazing tool. But if we can, I think as we've been touching on throughout the podcast, work towards doing things earlier or preventing things or knowing what's happening and be prepared, we can have a bit better outcomes, because IVF is not a fun experience for many. It results in sometimes when things don't work, divorce, suicide, other marital problems. And yeah, Amber introduced me to, oh, outside of just IVF, there are things like PCOS and endometriosis that are coming up that just don't have the care or attention or treatments that they need.
Mm-hmm. That oftentimes lead to IVF, right?
Yeah. That oftentimes lead to IVF. So if you can start going earlier in the chain to address some of the things there, hopefully you can get more success stories out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It always shocks me about how, you know, like obviously like critical reproduction as a race is for us, you know what I mean? But like how little, I think, attention we give it sometimes, how much stigma there is to it, and also how so many of the processes that we have as a society to facilitate, you know, reproduction are so riddled with like inefficiencies and basically, frankly, discriminatory, you know, language and operations against women in particular. And like you think this thing that's so critical to the sustaining our race would be made easier, you know, in our society, but we've seemed to have complicated it and turned it, unfortunately, in some cases into like a profit-driven thing that's like, you know, going to extract as much out of it, or something that we've just, you know, put to the side because we don't, you know. So it's good to see y'all breaking through that with, you know, a really innovative tech product. Appreciate that. We just want to ask, we're branding nerds and we love the name Juniper, so we want to understand where the name comes from.
I think it was initially a suggestion by Amber, but we were looking for something small because having named things in the past, I mean, engineer's worst or biggest problem, what do you call something? Juniper really fit because it's existed for a while throughout history as various different things. So in the, I think I'm pronouncing it properly, the Canaan region, so like around the Lower Levant, whichever, is a symbol of different fertility goddesses. So it's featured around there in the Old Testament as well, where different elements of the juniper tree or shrub itself featured as an angelic presence to protect people throughout the Bible. Juniper berries were also used in the Middle Ages as a means to induce labor or also unwanted pregnancies. Huh. So they were also used for the abortion.
Wow.
And Celtic festivals used to burn juniper wood as a purifying mechanism at the start of the year. So like getting rid of all the evil or the bad or something else that would affect motherhood. And it's also one of the most widely distributed shrubs in the world. So really? It sort of features everywhere. I'm not sure why.
Wow.
But yeah, I think it fit into everything that we wanted to do.
That's good. I think it's too easy in tech to like name your company something that sounds like another like pharmaceutical drug, like Laventa or something like that. You know what I mean? So like, appreciate that you dug into the history.
We tried those as well, by the
way. give me two of the ones that didn't make it that were like on the brainstorm table.
Sam, I think you had some that there were some Greek.
We're looking at gods and goddesses of different.
Okay. Fertility. Is it Ceres or something like that? Is one of them.
I think that was one of them. Yeah, I think Hera is another as well. Hera, but okay. Yeah, for different religions or cultures, seeing what fit in there, because most of the time they're relatively short, and also domain not taken.
Yeah, gotta check GoDaddy.
Before we wrap up, just want to give our audience, if they wanted to learn more about you guys, where would they find you on the internet, both the website for Juniper and then also both of yourselves personally and your founder journeys?
Well, we have actually a new website that launched just earlier this month. You can find us at getjuniper.co.uk, which is our website. Otherwise, our email is info@getjuniper.co.uk, and you can also find us on LinkedIn and just send us a message.
Amber Zhang, Sam Pratt, co-founders of Juniper, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
As always, we'd love to ask our guests to subscribe, smash that like button, and please give us at least a 5-star rating so we can bring on more great guests like Amber and Sam. Thanks again for listening, y'all.